Mr. Wilkie was nominated for president with all the spontaneity that money in the subterranean organization of high-powered utility and advertising men could buy. The convention in Philadelphia, attended by bewildered Republicans, permitted itself to be cajoled by an incantating medicine man candidate who was a combination of Wall Street lawyer, holding company front man, and frustrated Democrat who had never held a public office in his life. The tail of the ticket, if you please, is Senator Charles L. McNary of Oregon, one of the ablest and most experienced men now serving the American people, a man of character who has been in harness for more than a quarter of a century, trying to make the United States a better place in which to live. While Mr. Wilkie was seeking a humble party office as a member of the Tammany Hall organization in New York City, Senator McNary, as the Republican leader in the United States Senate, was using his very considerable talents in a sincere effort to help bring this country back out of the depths into which the panic of 1929 had precipitated it. I submit that the Wilkie McNary ticket does not make sense. It is symptomatic of the cynical attitude of Mr. Wilkie toward the American public that he should seek as his running mate a man whose public record is as different from his own as day is from night. I measure my words when I refer to the cynical attitude of Mr. Wilkie, because I know no other man in contemporary public life who has tried to avoid the consequences of his own public record by asking the voters to ignore that record, because, if you please, it was sheer special pleading. In an interview published in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch of September 15th, Mr. Wilkie, in trying to extricate himself from his embarrassing TVA power record, said, I quote, "I was a special pleader. I was getting $75,000 a year to be a special pleader," end of quote. It is not surprising that a man with Mr. Wilkie's cynicism should have pleaded with Senator McNary to take the vice presidential nomination. What is surprising is that a man with Senator McNary's convictions should have yielded to the Wilkie solicitations. This is all the more strange when it is remembered that Senator McNary had run out on the Philadelphia Convention in disgust. Perhaps he didn't like certain sinister interests that were engaged in a phony uprising of the people. But while we are left to guess just why Senator McNary reached for his hat and rushed for a train to Washington, we do not have to draw on our imaginations for his opinion of Wilkie as the possible candidate of the Republican Party. With his customary candor and penetration, Senator McNary left no doubt on that subject. According to the New York Times of January 25th, Senator McNary predicted that Mr. Wilkie would be defeated if nominated. Here is part of what he said. "The West, which the Republican Party must carry, will go against us if Mr. Wilkie heads the ticket. We can win if this convention selects as its candidates the men who stand for the advanced and traditional Republican ideals, and if the nominees are selected in an unbossed nomination," end of quote. Senator McNary's further shrewd foresight that Mr. Wilkie would go down as rapidly as he had risen has already been made good. His other prediction, that the West, which the Republican Party must carry, will go against us if Mr. Wilkie heads the ticket, will be found to be equally true on November 5th. Senator McNary has always been regarded as possessing more than the usual share of the canniness that he inherited from his Scotch ancestors. Perhaps, after all, he knew what he was doing when he agreed to add a touch of dignity to the incongruous ticket. It can do him no harm to run for vice president, because when Wilkie is defeated, as McNary has predicted, he will still be a member of the United States Senate. There he will continue to fight for what he conscientiously believes to be the best interest of the people, while the danger of turning our government over to a man who, when he was nominated, headed a Morgan-controlled holding company will be out of the window for good. The political troubadour, Mr. Wilkie, says that this is not an ordinary political campaign. He is right. It is a most unusual campaign. He calls it a crusade, But Wall Street's own Sir Galahad has not told us what he is crusading for and why. He's almost hysterical about his crusade. It has the appearance of a Tower of Babel crawling about the country on all fours on a railroad track. In conducting his crusade, the Republican candidate gives the appearance of being a very confused man. He is running with all the purpose and direction and clatter of a squirrel in a cage, with the result that he becomes so dizzy that he has to detail one member of his staff to explain that he misspoke. He promises one thing in one county and a different thing in the next. He makes grotesque charges before one audience, only to have some more scrupulous member of his staff try to catch the mistake before it appears in print in the adulating newspapers. Perhaps the explanation is that Mr. Wilkie is still acting the part of a special pleader for the same special interests that he has so well served in the past, except that now he is artfully pleading for votes and is willing to say whatever he thinks will get him votes from the audience to which he happens to be speaking at the moment. All of which comes down to the proposition that we are still in the dark as to what the real Mr. Wilkie really thinks. It is amusing, if somewhat pathetic, to see the greatest crusader since Peter the Hermit tearing about the country looking for an issue. Issue, issue, who's got the issue, he keeps muttering. And every time that he thinks that he has one, he finds that President Roosevelt was there long ahead of him. So to date, he has been forced to be merely a Me Too candidate, or rather, a Me Too But candidate. He has added the But in order to give himself the illusion of being an independent and forthright thinker on public matters. But I am content with the manner in which Mr. Wilkie is conducting his campaign. Like everybody else, he has a right to his own confusion. I do not agree with Mr. Wilkie's friends who are trying to persuade him not to talk too much, although I can understand their disappointment and anxiety. He erupts words as a volcano does gas. Perhaps one of his difficulties is that whereas he used to do things with electricity, he now attempts to do them with gas, and he just cannot manage to keep the gas jet from flickering. From his contradictory expressions, there sprout vast fields of ragweed that have given the members of his party political hay fever. The Republican candidate's bewildering barrage of words, many of which explode in his own ranks, has put his current party and his running mate in a position where they seem to be hanging in the air like a Hindu faker on a rope that isn't there.